Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the L.A. Steel Show. I'm Lila.
And Leo. And tonight we have union issues, but also, and we got Larry Dorman,
Public Affairs Coordinator
for ASME Union in Council 4. And but before we'll have him on in about 15 minutes, but I wanted to, tonight's the big night, 9 o'clock, there'll be a debate between Romney and Obama on all of your major stations, and
here's a little article about the truth about a few facts you may hear at the debate. So this might help you be a really informed listener.
Yeah, because this tells you the lies and the exaggeration.
Just then, what to watch
that
for.
That wound up being stated there.
Ideally, when the curtain rises on the first presidential debate at the University of Denver on Wednesday night, President Barack Obama and GOP presidential nominee Mitt Romney will spar over the issues shaping this election with honesty and clarity. But let's face it, the debates are yet another chance to deliver campaign talking points in 60-second, uninterrupted bursts, pitches, according to a recent Y Esquire poll, which many Americans think stray far from the truth. In anticipation of the spin, we've rounded up some of the debate's top topics, in fact, checked the candidates' tropes in advance. Romney, this is taxes. Before either candidate muddles this up, here are the key planks of Romney's tax plan. Bush-era income tax cuts and capital gains tax cuts become permanent. Of course, that's for the rich. All income tax rates are cut by an additional 20%. The alternative minimum tax and the estate tax repealed. To paraphrase Bill Clinton at the DNC, the problem is arithmetic. While Romney denies this, factcheck.org notes, the idea that his plan can somehow slash individual income tax rates without losing federal revenue or favoring the wealthy remains at best unproven, and in our judgment, based on available evidence, impossible. GOP vice presidential nominee Paul Ryan recently had to dance around this fact when pressed on it by Fox News. Exasperated, he said, "I don't have time. It would take me too long to go through all the math." Yeah, I'll bet. Be fuzzy math. Romney should probably have a better answer ready. He'll likely be grilled on the plan thanks to his recently released 2011 tax returns, which revealed a 14% tax rate. Obama has questioned whether that's a fair rate, claiming Romney pays less in taxes than middle and income Americans, a claim that itself is true only if payroll taxes are included in the comparison. The president will likely try to paint the 14% tax rate as an omen of things to come under Romney's plan, alleging it would benefit the wealthy.
Now, I have to take issue with that one because what I didn't understand when I read this was that Romney pays less than taxes than any middle class and low income Americans. A claim that itself is true only if payroll taxes are included in the comparison. Well, payroll taxes are what we pay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean that's almost absurd how they could question this, because I mean payroll taxes are what the average wage earner salary person pays. So,
including income tax.
Yeah. So, I mean, what the hell is he talking about? All right. There's. That's one thing that bothered me with this one specific article. The rest I understood, but that one did not make sense to me.
Not clear.
Because, I mean, the average American guy pays payroll taxes.
Right.
You know, Romney doesn't pay payroll taxes because his entire fortune is on capital gains. It's all investments.
That's right.
So, you know.
And they get a reduced rate for that.
Of course, 14%, whereas the average guy is paying 20%.
Right.
You know? So, you know, taking out some
and
security,
14% of what he earns is a lot in proportion, is a lot less, leaves a lot more than if you take 14% from my income, very much.
Well, that doesn't matter. It's still 14% to you, all right?
Is a big amount.
It's a big savings, okay? We're instead of the 20% they're taking out.
Right,
you know
that'd be
saying?
Great.
Yeah. You know, so it's the average guy gets 20% taken out of it.
Or more. Yeah.
You know, so it's like...
So it just doesn't seem fair. Romney, this is on jobs. As soon as you hear the former Massachusetts governor assure you of his plan to create 12 million jobs in only 4 years, remember this, Moody's Analytics and macroeconomic advisors predict that no matter who wins the election, broader economic factors ensure that the level of growth by 2016. So it doesn't really matter.
It doesn't matter.
It's going to go anyway, no matter who it is.
Regardless of who's president. You know?
Romney is dressing up an apolitical projected figure as something his jobs plan could uniquely generate. It's a bit like promising a plan to keep the Earth rotating around the sun for the next 4 years. Okay. That's good to point out. Obama, the president, for his part, will take credit for creating an impressive 4.5 million jobs. He's playing a bit fast and loose to get that number, however. That figure is not the net increase in jobs since the beginning of his presidency. To declare the 4.5 million figure, Obama is only counting private sector job growth since January 2010, which was the low point for the private sector. Factor in the job cuts to the public sector and the total jobs tally since 2010 becomes more like 4 million. But since he isn't counting from 2009, when millions of jobs were lost, the figure is misleading. Obama has more or less broken even on job creation since taking office.
But we got to understand something too. That he took office in January, but we lost 8 million jobs right when he took office. He had nothing to do with that.
And that, you know, and that was the previous president, and
exactly.
We all know who that was.
Yeah.
Medicare, Romney. The GOP's Medicare raid mime alleges that Obama is about to rob Medicare to the tune of $700 billion in order to pay for the Affordable Care Act. This earned Ryan a storm of jeers at a recent AARP conference, but Romney may still try to float it for its sheer scare value. In fact, the often cited $700 billion figure represents the savings the ACA yields over 10 years by reducing Medicare spending, and it's chiefly the providers rather than the beneficiaries who pony up to finance the long-term spending cut. Obama. If during the debate, however, the president starts bashing the Romney-Ryan plan on Medicare, claiming it costs seniors an extra $6,400, know that he's actually referring to the obsolete Ryan budget from 2011, not the plan backed by the Republican ticket. The actual plan shares the Democrats' goals of capping Medicare spending. Healthcare, Romney. Ever since the Supreme Court ruled the Affordable Care Act constitutional, Romney has backed off from his more hyperbolic criticisms of the law, now stating that he'll repeal it and keep the good bits. He has yet to say, however, how he'd pay for those selected parts. Also during the debate, Romney will likely try to fuse America's concerns over jobs with lingering doubts about the ACA by repeating the old standard line that Obamacare is killing jobs and small business. As factcheck.org notes, this line is a serious misreading of a report by the Congressional Budget Office, which actually says that due to the subsidies provided by the ACA, about 800,000 workers will retire earlier and juggle fewer jobs. So he really stretches and changes things around. The deficit. You want to read the deficit, Leo?
The deficit and then energy policies are amazing. On the deficit, Obama, the president, is correct when he says that he inherited the biggest deficit in our history, as he recently told Steve Croft on 60 Minutes. But he tends to use that fact as a shield against the Republican criticism about his own contributions to the deficit, which are considerable. To both Croft and the AARP, he stretched the premise to its limit. his policies from the stimulus to the rebooted war in Afghanistan account for only about 10% of the nation's deficit over the years. He blames the rest on the president, on President Bush. That's what some would call a whopper. But because Romney is probably eager to hammer the president on runaway spending, Obama might end up slipping this line into the debate anyway. And the facts, however, are these. The fiscal year 2009, Obama was responsible for adding almost $203 billion to the deficit, which in the year topped $1.4 trillion that year. But factcheck.org reminds us that this was just the first of 4 years of trillion-plus deficits. The last three budgets fall squarely under Obama. And during that time, the federal government ran up deficits of $1.3 trillion in 2010, and $1.3 trillion in 2011, and about $1.2 trillion in the fiscal year that ends September 30th, for a total of nearly $5.2 trillion in deficit spending, also according to factcheck.org.
Energy. Obama. The president's like to say he doubled a lot of things, most notably the generation of renewable energy and, in the long term, fuel efficiency of cars and trucks, and is likely to do so again on Wednesday night. These boasts will sound great, but unfortunately for him, they're heavily exaggerated. Since Obama took office, only a certain division of renewable energy, that of wind and solar power, has doubled. Overall, the increase in capacity is under 30%, and while the EPA is indeed raising fuel standards for increased efficiency by 2025, factcheck.org has noted that, contrary to the president's rhetoric, our cars will hardly take us twice as far by that point. Romney on energy. The GOP nominee has his own favorite talking points on energy, starting with his misleading claim about what the president has doubled, gas prices. The statement is technically true, but should be qualified by the fact that the prices were extraordinarily low when Obama took office due to the recession. Also hyped up is the nominee's talk about Keystone XL, the pipeline project to transport oil from Canada to plants in the Gulf Coast. The Romney refrain is that Obama botched a crucial energy project while wholly trashing the plans to import more oil from our neighbors to the north. What Obama did was delay the assembly of the northern part of the new pipeline that was set through Nebraska's Sand Hills, and he did so with bipartisan support from the state's lawmakers. A new, more environmentally sensitive route is set to be approved in a few months, and the whole thing should be up by 2015. Immigration. Romney. When the hot-button issue of immigration reared its head, be ready for the candidates to resort to political hit-and-runs. Romney is likely to toss out the charge that Obama did nothing to tackle immigration in his first 3 years. But while the Obama administration certainly hasn't reached a comprehensive plan, the president lobbied for the DREAM Act, which would qualify undocumented youth for a conditional path to citizenship. While the Democrats controlled the House and was met with opposition once the Republicans took over. Romney might also complain that Obama's Deferred Action Plan, granting some children born in the U.S. to undocumented immigrants a reprieve from deportation, doesn't offer a permanent solution for aspiring immigrants. Yet in his own plan, only young illegal immigrants who joined the military would have access to that solution. Obama. Meanwhile, Obama may claim that during the Republican primary season, Romney endorsed Arizona's controversial SB 1070 law, requiring police to determine detainees' immigration status. Some argue through racial profiling and call the law a model for the nation. But Romney was actually talking about Arizona's E-Verify law, which more modestly requires employers to check a job candidate's immigration status on an online database. So, there you have it. That's what they stand for, and they may be bending things a bit. And there's a little thing here that you can take a poll. Do you think Obama is a better debater than Romney? I have no idea.
Okay. We're going to call Larry Dorman right now. He's the public affairs coordinator for AFSCME Union and Council 4.
And folks, you can... And folks, while Larry, while Leo's calling Larry, you can go to the AF and get this.
This is not that site. This is on
It was on Yahoo News. I did go to the AFL website.
Right.
So this is a pretty good one from... Do we have anybody?
Hello.
Oh, hi, Larry.
How are you?
Oh, we're well. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Good. We were just reading the truth about a few facts you might hear at the debate, just so that people have their ears up. And actually, it was off. I thought it was off the AFL-CIO website, but it was actually off Yahoo News, and it was by Brendan James. Very good. Gives you some things to look for and listen to see
how they really stand.
Yeah,
it's all fact-checking and really mean, you know. And
how they dodge questions.
Yeah.
I like one of the biggest dodges that the Republicans have been using is that $700 billion savings for Medicare.
Right.
You know?
On the health care.
On the health care issue. You've heard that, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
That Obama's going to cut $700 billion?
Right, which is just a whole bunch
of stuff. And they use that on all their ads and everything.
But it's not true. What it is it's actually savings that are coming from providers, all right, of Medicare.
Correct.
You know, from the doctors and whatever, hospitals.
And it's over 10 years, actually.
It's over a 10-year period.
I don't know how they took that number and used it that way.
It's
interesting.
Yeah.
We'll see what they have to see on the debate. Are you looking forward to that tonight, Larry?
I am, actually. Although, you know, I'm always disappointed by the debates because, you know, you really want to see these guys go at it mano a mano, and the formats really militate against having a spirited exchange. So we'll see. You know, I think it gives them too much, the candidates, a little too much wiggle room to use their sound bites.
Well,
yeah, and it's not really a debate. It's just each one gets a chance to talk, and it's not much of a debate, really.
Right. It's not actually, you know, a classic debate in the sense that we all grew up knowing what debates were. So,
and
looking forward, yes, but it's not really a true, as you say, it's not a true debate.
Do you think that it'll sway many people, or do you think it's just one more thing that most people have made up their minds, I think?
Yeah, I'm in that camp. I'm not sure how many more. I mean, look, everything they're doing between now and November, so much of what they're doing is kind of geared toward the middle, figuring out who they can pick off to ensure victory. So to that extent, the debates are important, and, you know, they fire up each of the respective bases. I think that's what, you know.
Yeah.
I think
they may collect, you know, some people, but most people that I've talked to have kind of made up their minds. We were recently, Leo actually was recently polled by Quinnipiac.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that was an interesting
poll.
You know, but
at random, the way they.
Yeah, they pulled on the Obama. That's probably Freudian slip.
Yeah, maybe.
Obama Romney. But the Obama and Romney, and then they talked about Chris Murphy and
Linda McMahon.
And McMahon.
Yeah.
And I thought it was kind of interesting what they came up with on that particular poll, because they were saying that their questions were like, how do you feel about what do you feel about do you think that Chris Murphy is very responsible in his
personal finances.
His personal finances, and they said, "Do you strongly agree, moderately agree, slightly agree, or don't agree at all?" Well, I said, "I don't think so at all," you know, based on what I've seen.
Right.
You know what I mean? Based on what I've heard, it doesn't sound like he's very responsible there in any in the way he handles his own income.
Yeah, but it's such a non-issue relative to what.
Yeah, but you know the problem is that they're asking it, which I thought was interesting.
So I'm wondering how much of an issue it is with voters.
I was talking to a teacher the other
believe
day.
A lot of people think it's an issue.
A lot of people
do. Oh, yeah,
think
no, I don't doubt that. That's what I'm saying, because the media and because the pollsters.
I know.
Yeah,
but the reason that they're actually asking those questions is to see, I think, what really what people are
what they're
really,
all
really
about.
Thinking, you know, and who they are and what age.
I think the biggest problem that Chris Murphy has, and this is what I think, I think he was attacked by Linda McMahon, and he
right.
was attacked
yep.
in some weak points, but he never fought back on those points. He just let it go. And I don't think you can do that and win an election on the types of points that she criticized him on. One, she criticized him on how well he did his job, saying that he was absent from all these committee hearings.
Right.
Now, I don't know how they rate people at committee hearings, and neither does anybody else, you know, how many most representatives go to. But he never responded. He never responded to that, and I think that was a mistake.
Well,
and he hasn't responded to the latest to the more recent attacks of his not paying his rent and his mortgage
and making a deal with Webster Bank
and that,
bailing them out with $400 million.
And that
really
looked bad, because that's why Dodd didn't run again.
Right.
Because of
the same
kind of thing. And people remember that because it wasn't so long ago.
Right.
And I think that's made him look like a really weak candidate. And I'm no supporter of Linda McMahon. You can understand that. But I wish he weren't so vulnerable.
Well, you know, that's the thing, is that it just she came out swinging right away as soon as the primary is over. And, you know, people need to remember that the issues she's raised are distraction issues.
Because
he doesn't want to talk about the issues that matter. And when you have basically unlimited wealth to do that, you're going to be very effective. So, you know, I mean, I hear it a lot. People are saying, oh, Chris Murphy's not being, he's not responding forcefully. You know, he's taking.
You've heard that a lot, haven't you?
But, you know, you
I wish he responded. I really think
well,
it would have.
But, you know, again, the system is so slanted against you when you have that kind of money deficit that the paid advertising. You know,
well, I have to say, though, Larry, honest to God, I'm an independent and always have been and probably always will be. But I see as many ads coming on television from Murphy as there are for McMahon right now.
But that's just
and
recently.
But that's in the last month. But still, for every tit, there's a tat, it seems, on every station. But the thing that bothers me so much is for every attack that she makes, he comes back with some nothing, you know, no real defense other than calling her a nasty person, you know. Nobody's buying it, because he has no subsistence, no substance in his own defense,
neither one of them are really talking about.
I just wanted to ask you, what is his track record as far as union goes and as far as job creation and so on?
I think he's done a very good job as going back to his days as state senator, you know, as congressman. He has a near 100% AFL-CIO rating. He has fought when he's fought Republicans on their efforts to gut programs and to cut taxes for the wealthy. It's Chris Murphy, actually, is the only person I know of aggressively pushing for the Buy American provision, and it was Chris Murphy who actually launched the dialogue about bringing jobs back to this country. I've seen very few.
Why aren't they promoting that instead of just trying to scratch?
Right, that's what I say. I think they got, you know, again, when you have, and I'm not, you know, necessarily defending this. I am just trying to give you the context that.
I was honestly hoping that
he would come out swinging.
That he would show something that he's done in the last 8 years or so. Of value, and he comes back and says, "Oh, I created 75 jobs in New Britain or something." You know, it's like that. He doesn't say anything, you know,
right.
except kisses his kid.
I wish
he's incredibly, incredibly poor. campaign. Just incredible.
I don't know.
For an incumbent.
Yeah, I think
for
we
an
got,
incumbent.
You know, again, and you know, look, we had, certainly we had signs that this is what McMahon would do. She tried to do it against Blumenthal. Remember back
yep.
when they were running?
Yeah, but
tried to hit him on the
he managed to come out on top.
Yeah, but and he fought back, and you know,
yep.
I think Chris just really got floored. It's kind of like this boxing match where, you know, McMahon just came out throwing haymakers, and Murphy was stunned. But you know, there's still there's not much time, but there is time. I think he's getting his sea legs back, and we'll see. I mean, look, if I were giving him media advice, I'd be urging him to be more aggressive, to not stop answering questions about mortgages and loans, and say, I'm here to talk about the issues. Go to Linda McMahon. You know, here's the other thing. Linda McMahon will not talk to reporters. She has carefully protected herself. She
really?
Used ads, mailers. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. She's not talking to the press. She's avoiding it where possible. WNPR, I mean, you couldn't have a more, you know, kind of neutral, user-friendly format, because they're not going to take sides, you know.
Right.
Connecticut WNPR has been trying to get her on Where We Live. She won't go on. You know, she only does forums that are carefully controlled, you know, kind of these hermetically sealed visits to, you know, manufacturers who are...
How has Murphy been with the press?
He's very accessible, and that's, you know, that's the bane and the blessing of... his campaign, because he's accessible and available. But then, you know, I was at an event that he had last week after he released his ads on featuring women questioning McMahon's record. And, you know, the media, there was a, like, they were like pod people, first of all. There were like 50 McMahon people with signs just inching up to the press conference, you know, while Murphy was talking. And
yeah.
then, you know, the press immediately started asking him questions about everything other than the issues he was discussing. So, you know, that's the problem. He makes himself accessible, but then, you know, they're asking him issues that are McMahon put out there as distractions. So it is, you know, it's sort of fascinating to watch, and I'm not going to disagree with you guys. He needs to kind of
reorient.
He needs to reorient.
I wanted to ask you tonight what his mm-hmm. record was, because for unions and for job
like
creation.
I said, I gave you the answer. I mean, he's
got I appreciate
90,
that answer, because
he's got a 90%
I wish that he said that in an ad.
Yeah. And I wish the union would have come out with something like that too. But
don't forget what campaign finance laws allow and don't allow. I mean, we can't, you know, trumpet or advertise publicly about you know, our support of a candidate. We can tell our members.
Mm-hmm.
This one definitely was a flyer that came mm-hmm. out to you.
It was to me, because I'm a member.
But it came out, it was a complete attack ad on McMahon without any...
The AFL, that was an AFL-CIO.
Yeah.
It was like
flyer.
It was
exactly
like,
what you're talking about.
You know, guys, even the AFL-CIO, they could have done better than that, you know.
Leo was disappointed. He wanted to see something that really outlined all the positive things that Chris Murphy had done, and he thought
and
that would be be much more effective
right.
than just criticizing her. You know,
right? And I hear you. And again, I think that because the onslaught has been so intense, but.
Yeah.
For example, you know, my newsletter, which includes you know, an election section. Lila, you'll be getting it soon, probably in 2 to 3 weeks. That you know, has a comparison piece.
Oh, that'll be good.
Like four
different definitely on the air.
I think you're right. I think that there needs to be you know, besides just attacking, you know, you want to lay out the positions. Why one candidate
absolutely.
Is good for workers and why another's not going to be good for workers. And I think we all agree. I mean, this guy has just been fragged from the get-go, and it's been hard for him to get.
He has.
It's terrible. I can't stand to watch it. And the thing that scares me, Larry, the thing that really scares me, she gets elected. We will never, ever get her out of there because she has so much money.
Be like a Joe Lieberman, basically. I thought he had a lot of money, but the guy, you couldn't get rid of the guy. You know?
Say that again, who?
Joe Lieberman.
Oh, Joe,
he was
yeah,
in
right.
there forever.
Oh, I mean, most of them, actually, when you look at it. I mean, you know, the only guy, you know, Lieberman had to run it basically as a Republican to stop.
In order to stay alive.
That whole institution, it's crazy how once you get in, generally, you know, once you get in there, it's pretty darn hard to get them out of there.
But no one would stand a chance running against her as an incumbent with all the money that she has at her fingertips.
No, and she's a textbook case of why you need campaign finance. You know, this is
God,
crazy.
I'm afraid she's going to get elected and she's going to be there.
She won't be moderate. She's pretending will be. But we all know what the truth is going to be if she's elected. So
very, very scary.
So this
I'm
a scary,
talking
this
that,
is a
that
scary
in her race. Case, in this case, that the debate will maybe swing more people toward Chris Murphy, because I'm hoping that he's better on his feet than she is.
But in this case of the Senate, I mean, you're looking at all of the, like, 70% of the Republicans voted for Lieberman, okay, in the last race.
Yeah.
Against the I forget his name even, the Republican candidate. Do you remember his name, the guy who ran?
I don't remember it.
Against Lieberman.
They didn't even vote for the Republican. They voted for the independent.
I remember
Giordano.
No, that was in 2000. But in 2006, there was this guy they nominated, the Republican Party nominated, and he...
poor guy.
I felt terrible for him, really, because it was so funny. He came out and he says, I'm nominated. He says, I was nominated, and he says, I can't even get the Republicans to support me. He says, they're supporting Lieberman. And he said that in the debate, with Lieberman. that's what's going to happen this time around, I think, with Foley. I think is what's Foley McMahon, because I think she's got the Republicans revved up, and Lieberman's Dodd was elected.
Lieberman.
No, Dodd, she's taking Lieberman's seat.
Yes, that's right.
But Dodd's seat was a Democrat.
That's
Dodd
right.
Dodd was a straight Democrat. So everybody who supported Blumenthal virtually were voting for Dodd at the same time.
Right.
At that time.
Yeah.
But now, everyone who voted for Lieberman was a Republican, even though and died in the wool. They were Republican.
Crazy stuff. You can't make it up.
And most Democrats didn't vote for Lieberman. Okay, in 2006, they didn't want him.
Right.
You know, so.
Right.
They wanted Lamont, and I don't know.
It's crazy.
Politics are kind of weird, but I just don't know where to go with these two. But if we turn back to tonight's debate, I think these debates are critical, because I think with Murphy and McMahon, it'll be the first time really people see them together.
And I think if the right questions are asked, I think maybe he'll stand a better chance, and it could be better for him.
From
what you're saying about her, since she's so controlled and so carefully taken care of, she may not look as good.
Yeah, but again, you know, as you guys know, though, the debates, so. You know, really aren't debates. So we'll have to see. If
they do make a lot of difference.
You can make some critical mistakes there if you're not. If someone throws you a question that you're not comfortable with, and if she's not used to that, she may not handle it as well.
Or if they lose their cool, or they get distracted or off.
Right.
I mean,
right.
look at what happened to Romney in his debates, or Perry, or Gingrich, or any of these guys.
They all had clown moments.
big time.
Not that I'm sure that I would do any better, but
even George Bush. Remember George W. I mean, he had that long pause with Gore. I think it was with Kerry. I forget, but he had this long, like 10-15 second pause where he couldn't say a word when he was asked the question. He just went,
of course, Kerry.
It was like, whoa.
You felt like the mic. microchip guy bent or something.
Exactly.
But, you know, Kerry was such a bumbling fool when he ran against Bush that he, you know.
Oh, wasn't that awful?
There was no
reason
for Bush winning that election other than Kerry's incompetence as a candidate.
Oh, that was so embarrassing. I mean, he was a bad candidate.
But the thing with Kerry was he really won the popular vote, and he won the states of Ohio and Florida. The problem was is that there was over 3 million provincial ballots that were never counted, all right?
Right?
They refused to count. They threw them out, all right, because
right.
people were going in not trusting the electronic voting machines because they knew those were all rigged, all right? And, you know, people were pressing Kerry and coming up, and the vote was coming up Bush. And they were starting, and they were all, you know, they were getting ticked off
and
complaining,
and that's long ago forgotten. Believe it or not,
and
people
then Kerry,
don't remember it.
Then there were like 12, like even Obama and Dodd and Hillary Clinton and Barbara Boxer all stood up, all had a conference, a Senate hearing. It wasn't a hearing, really.
They spoke. I remember
they spoke. And they all said, they all denounced the election, saying that, you know, Bush, that the election was a fraud, you know, and that his votes weren't counted and that it should be recounted and so on and so forth. But Kerry, that SOB didn't even show up to contest his own and never contested the outcome of the election, and I mean that
That's
guy
something
lost.
I never understood.
He lost all face. I mean, after the Swift boat thing and everything,
yeah,
it showed that he was
again flattened from the get go. That's what happened.
Oh, but he proved his colors there, and you know he was a complete idiot. So I mean it was a total waste. But you know Obama in 08, Obama came out strong. In a lot of areas, Hillary, everybody worried about Bill. You know, I don't think people wanted Bill Clinton in there. You know,
right?
That's why she didn't get the nomination.
He would be the crypto president, actually. You know, and I think that's why she didn't make it. And of course, Edwards had a chance there, but he you know, he was waning. And you know, we just—I don't know. Every election cycle, we seem to get stuck with two evils, you know.
Yeah.
And this one, I
understand the frustration.
Evils, but yeah.
I mean, I very strongly support a lot of things that Obama stands for, but I also strongly oppose a lot of things. But
right.
not as many things as Mitt Romney. I could never, ever vote for someone like that, ever.
No, it'll be a disaster.
Oh, terrible. And he would take so many. His presidency would cause so much suffering for the American people. It would be such a disaster. And
right.
you just can't have someone like that. He wants to privatize everything, for God's sakes. You know,
how do you
can't have that,
Larry? What, I mean, what are your feelings here on this support of Murphy? That's great. I can understand that, and you cleared that up. How do you feel about Obama? All right. I mean, let me just say that I feel there's not much choice here. You know, it's Obama or.
It's
nobody.
Yeah, that's
you just
correct.
Can't go the Romney way, you know.
Well, look,
but,
you know, I think we all agree. Obama inherited a horrific mess.
Yeah,
you got that right.
Bush and the Republicans created where, you know, the stimulus program, particularly the bailout of the auto companies, I think in the end had a positive impact on keeping saving jobs in America. I think that the financial meltdown, though not.
And I think that was the right thing to do. At
right.
the time,
not,
I wasn't sure, but as it turned out, I think it was really the right thing to do, and I'm glad.
I see, I'm with you on that. My problem is the failure to aggressively prosecute these robber barons who destroyed the economy.
Oh, that's probably my single,
you know, biggest concern with Obama. And, you know, there are a lot of, you know, there are Citibank people who made their way into the administration and you know, other financial.
These were all people that put him in office, though. These were his biggest backers.
We're going right back to campaign finance reform again.
Yeah,
I think
right.
he would have had a much freer hand if he was not tied to those people.
And I think
and
that we
those,
need to see what happens in the election, because I'm going to hope and be ever the optimist that if he's reelected and has a Congress he can work with, that he will pursue a more aggressive policies, economic policies that will benefit the middle class, that will create jobs, that will level the playing field in terms of the tax burden.
That's what I'm hoping for.
A better place. But, you know, we can't even have that dialogue, the three of us, until we get them in there, and then we see.
Yeah,
that.
That's true.
He may very well end up getting reelected, and we're going to be stuck with a Republican Senate and House, in which case nothing is going to happen.
That would be a frightening aspect. That would really be frightening.
I mean, the very thought of that, because we'll just have gridlock, and nothing will be accomplished.
Right, yeah, and that will hurt everybody. That'll hurt Obama in particular.
Yeah,
a Republican guy, he said, Leah, this is a really hold your nose election. No,
it's interesting.
He says this one is really hold your nose. And both
countries in rough shape.
It really is. But I know guys like you keep fighting to try to make it better.
Got
for
it.
Everybody.
Can't stop. You know, I can't stop. So, you know.
Well,
and,
we
and
appreciate
look,
you.
I can't wait for us.
You're out there, and you got. I think this year more than any other year. My life with politics, I've come down to an understanding that I really didn't have before, because I don't think I've never seen more polar opposites in the presidential election, where you
right.
even though the similarities are there, I think Obama put it right, and so did Biden when he said, I mean. It's the fundamental difference between you're looking at a fundamental differences between a democratic society or basically a fascist society, you know, and I think that's where we're headed. I mean, if we go the route of the Republican Party, if they go with Romney and Ryan, I mean, we are just damn doomed. It's just another. I mean, I can't even imagine four more years of a worse than Bush presidency.
But they certainly seem like they're on that road.
I mean, whatever they could gut out of
whatever's left,
they'll do. Yeah. I mean,
they're on a destruction, a search and destroy mission, no doubt about
that's
it.
That's exactly it. You know,
I just wonder when I listen to the polls, Larry. How it could possibly be that close? I really don't.
I was thinking that too. You know, it's just plain as the nose on our faces that this stuff is bad. This guy's bad in every
way. You know,
yeah.
There's nothing. There ought to be a route. Seeming quality to this guy. You know,
I think that one of the things that really upset me the most, and this might be a silly thing. I don't know.
No.
What really bothered me was the interview that they had with his sons, and
mm-hmm.
when they said they couldn't possibly be in the military because they had to work.
Well, they had jobs.
Yeah.
And had jobs.
Right.
Jobs. The rest
of
us could go into the military and fight. You know, that sort of attitude?
Right.
I mean,
Romney took three or four deferments. All right, Romney himself from the Vietnam War, because he was supposedly on a mission to save the world, you know, and, as Mormon missionary days, and so his father got him off that.
Yep, he wouldn't know the meaning of public service.
I mean, remember Dick Cheney got five deferments. You know, none of these guys.
Maybe that's better, given the way he handled the rifle. Maybe that was better.
Yeah, really. But it's just a frightening thing. But Larry, I'm really, you know, I know you wanted to get off earlier tonight, and we really thank you for coming on tonight.
Yeah, we're having a little debate party, so I got to go get ready for that. But I guess hopefully when we talk, it'll be right after the election, and we'll either be in a good mood or we'll be really downcast.
We'll be crying.
We'll be commiserating here.
Yeah. I think that Obama's going to be elected. I really do, too.
I think it's just what the makeup of Congress is going to be.
Yeah. And
when you look at only 5% and 6% differences, and out of the poll...
I don't believe that. I don't.
Do you love this? The recent Wall Street... the Wall Street Journal poll?
Which came out,
they had Obama up by about 2 or 3%. With a 3% margin of error, so it was a dead heat.
Yeah, I don't believe it.
But if you look at, but the thing is Murdoch owns the Wall Street Journal
and Fox News.
Exactly.
You know, and he dictates the editorial. You know, the journalistic integrity of that.
Right. That's why I was about to tell you. I can't take that seriously. No,
no,
I can't either. I just laughed when I saw it, and I hope the rest of the public is doing
that. But most of the other polls still, all the different polls still show them, Obama ahead by 6 or 7 points, and Obama ahead with independents, and Obama ahead with a lot of others, with most groups, but and especially after the convention, so. I don't know. We'll just keep our fingers crossed and hope that...
You bet.
Well,
hey, got to run.
Enjoy
so.
Your pre-debate party there. And
yeah.
I hope we'll be celebrating when we next talk.
I do, too. So
I'm looking
thank you so much
to
for
that,
having
Larry.
Me.
Have a great
all
evening,
right.
And thanks for spending
Leo,
some time
Lila,
with us.
And I'll send you a Yahoo on the Yahoo after, if Obama wins.
Okay.
Yahoo on my Yahoo there, okay?
Oh, man.
Okay.
All right. I'll be looking for you on Facebook, so I'll see you.
Right, good night, Larry.
Bye-bye.
Good night, Larry.
That was Larry Dorman from the Ask Me Union and letting us talk with him a little bit, and we wanted to find out what his thoughts were on Chris Murphy and Linda McMahon, because like most of the public, we've been watching those ads back and forth, and I wanted to hear from him just exactly what he thought. And, you know, it's pretty hard to fight all that money, I guess. She started very early out of the box.
Oh, she sure did.
Oh, as soon as those primaries were over.
Hey, you know, the thing was that she's a threat, and she's a major threat.
I
was glad to hear that, you know, Larry said that they were good. I mean, Murphy had a lot of good qualities, okay, but damn.
Let's emphasize them and get them out there.
I mean, how are we supposed to know about this unless they advertise?
Unless they talk about it. They need to let the public know.
I mean, people have gone to see Murphy speak. Most of them are talking, and stuff, have all been disappointed with him, on different issues. So it's like,
I want to see. I haven't seen him personally, so I want to wait and see what the debate is like.
Yeah.
And for me, that debate will make a difference.
I think it will for a lot of people. And then
the presidential
one's
not going to make a difference. I've already made up my mind.
Not as much.
Yeah.
But it will make a lot of difference.
Uh-huh.
It might.
For some people,
it might.
There are a lot of independents out there.
Yep.
And might make a difference for them. They might be waiting to see what happens on the debate, how each candidate looks.
Yeah, I don't know. The way that the Republicans treated Ron Paul, the way that they got,
they swept him under the rug.
They swept him under and virtually, just annihilated his campaign.
Yeah.
And we never really found out what happened or why he so abruptly let, fell out of the primaries. They did have money, and they had a whole lot of supporters.
Yeah.
But,
there was no explanation for that at all.
And then Rand Paul decided to support Romney. You know,
yeah, what was that all
that
about?
Was the, that was the knife in the back.
That was the killer.
That was the killer. Of, you know, that killed
his
old man.
Yeah.
That Rand Paul, that Aqua Buddha man. You ever hear that? Remember the Aqua Buddha?
No.
Oh, he, when he was in college, he worshipped the Aqua Buddha.
He did?
Yeah. And he smoked a lot of weed and
I guess
did a lot
so.
Of acid and
Rand Paul?
Rand Paul.
Oh.
Yeah, okay. Rand Paul. And is Ron Paul's son, and that was big story on.
I don't really remember
that. Yeah, that's when he back in 2010 actually when he won his.
When he was running.
Yeah, but
he had a major conversion, isn't he a fundamentalist now or something?
Yeah, Buddha. Oh, he's an atheist. He's whatever he is, but it doesn't matter. But the thing is that the Republicans are a heartless bunch of folks. They just, at least the ones
yeah,
that are in there.
The ones that
the
are
Libertarians
in there.
Made a lot of sense. Libertarians, to me, made a whole lot of sense. But they were shackled by the Republican Party.
Yeah.
You know, they were shackled to the Republican Party.
And what
Party.
Happened to the moderate Republican?
And their leader, Ron Paul, wouldn't leave the party. You know, wouldn't go as an independent, and virtually destroyed himself.
So, and destroyed their voice.
And destroyed their voice, which is exactly what happened with
Dean.
With Dean in 2004,
Yep. The carnival
he
show.
He took all the outsiders who, the Nader Lakers and the
They herded them up and penned them up.
Yep, and they.
Then they were totally shackled, and they had no voice.
And then they lost.
Well, they had no voice.
Well,
their spokesman was gone.
Well, they brought in Kerry.
Uh-huh. Right. Well, what I'm telling you, Dean didn't turn out to be an honest voice for them.
No.
And then all of a sudden, they had no voice.
No,
so they had
brought,
nowhere to go.
They brought...
That's exactly what happened. It's the same
but
formula.
But that's what their plan was.
It's very formulaic.
That's what their plan was.
Yeah.
And we got about 9 minutes left of the show.
Let's see
and
what else
to,
we have. We maybe have a few little articles we can share with you
to,
folks.
I want to go back... To
but I think a lot of folks feel like we do.
Oh, absolutely. I think so. And just hang on 1 second.
I want the unemployed to get some unemployment. The people that don't have enough food, I want them to get food stamps. The people that need medical care, I want them to have that. I don't want all that stuff eliminated, and under the Republicans, they seem to think that people should just go hungry, and that's too bad.
Oh, absolutely. This particular article is from the AFL-CIO blog, and...
Unequal justice
and
the 1% Supreme Court.
Right.
Well, isn't that the truth?
And it's a short article, but it talks about how screwed up the Supreme Court is, and how they're not taking
any cases
that they're only taking business cases, okay, big company cases,
yeah.
and nothing that's against the nothing
for the consumer
supporting the consumer or the
well that's all they have
or the little guy,
Here's a audio piece here. Let's
yeah, that's way too long. No, no,
oh,
it's
it?
Way too long. The thing's about half
oh,
an hour.
And
it's not very good. So. But I wanted to just read this tonight. Yeah,
it'll
please
go
don't.
It'll go off.
Okay.
This is... Oh, I don't know how to get this off.
Yeah.
You can't.
Yeah,
you
I'm
can.
Sorry.
Okay. Let's see what this says. This is a cross post from the Alliance for Justice's Justice Watch blog. In a series of 5-4 rulings, a majority in the United States Supreme Court effectively has rewritten the law to favor big business at the expense of the American people, according to a new documentary, Unequal Justice, The Relentless Rise of the 1% Course, produced by Alliance for Justice, which was released online Monday. Today, as the Supreme Court begins a new term, the court will be open for business, says AFJ President Nan Aron. The term is already packed with cases with potential to restrict corporate accountability and limit everyday Americans' civil rights and access to justice. The court's decisions this term could have harmful consequences for the ability of consumers, victims of discrimination, and others to get a fair day in court. But no one should be surprised, Aaron said. What we are likely to see in the term that begins today was decades in the making. Unequal Justice chronicles a 40-year campaign by corporate special interests to put the thumb of big business on the scales of justice. The campaign had its origins in a profoundly influential memo written in 1971 by corporate lawyer Lewis Powell, just months before he himself was named to the court by President Richard Nixon. The memo urged the business community to fight what was then a burgeoning consumer environmental movement. There has been much attention in recent months to the way that the executive and the legislative branches stack the deck in favor of the 1% and against the rest of us, Aaron said, but there's been far too little attention paid to the success of big businesses in influencing the Supreme Court. With a presidential election just weeks away, it's time to pay attention to the decisions a president makes that often have the most lasting consequences. His nominees, who will be appointed to the nation's highest court, said Aaron, we produced this video because we want to highlight the importance of the Supreme Court in the lives of everyday Americans and to spur a renewed sense of activism to hold the court accountable for its actions. Okay, if you want to learn more about this issue discussed in Unequal Justice and to find out about hosting a screening, you can go to unequaljustice.org and read the AFJ President Nan Aaron's call to action in the nation. Or just go to the AFL-CIO website and go to this article and you can get right to it.
Yeah. Oh, there.
All right.
And let's see, we got about a few more minutes.
We have about 4 minutes. The economy.
Let's see. Is your coming budget obstacle course?
This might be interesting. More proof ending Bush tax cuts helps, not hurts job growth. It gets a little complicated, but we're going to drill down into some new economic data from two new analyses showing that, contrary to what Mitt Romney and his economic hatchet man, Paul Ryan, claim, ending the Bush tax cuts for the wealthy will not hurt the economy or growth. I didn't see that. It gets a little, let's see, on one study by economist Owen Zindar of the University of California, he looked at the history of tax cuts for the top 10% compared to tax cuts aimed to middle and lower income families and the 90% of taxpayers. In a nutshell, tax cuts for those at the top had no significant positive or negative impact. But those for the rest of us, the 90%, had a multiplier effect, in Zindar's words. Well, let's face it, there are more of us. So we can buy many more pounds of butter. I mean, it doesn't take a genius to figure that out, does it?
No.
If you're wealthy and you're a member of the 1%, a family of four is going to buy 1 pound of butter, you know, and there's only so many of them. But, you know, if you have all the rest of the 90% buying a pound of butter, that's a heck of a lot more butter.
Exactly.
Or whatever it is. At 1%, the GDP tax cut for the bottom 90% results in a 2.7 percentage points of GDP growth over a two-year period. No kidding. The corresponding estimate for the top 10% is 0.2 percentage points and is insignificant statistically because there are fewer of them. The power is in the numbers. Zindar also looked at the impact of tax cuts for the rich on job growth. Remember, that's the centerpiece of the Romney-Ryan package. They tout that tax cuts for the rich, the so-called job creators, will mean a plethora of new jobs for the nation, maybe even the 47% who they claim are living on government handouts. Wrong, says Zindar. He found a 1% GDP tax cut for the 90% created a 1.9% growth in employment, but tax cuts for the wealthy resulted in only a 0.4% jump in growth. They don't put it into their business. They put it into their pocket.
1% tax cut for all of us, all right, created a
1.9% growth in employment.
Right, in employment, whereas 1%, or rather it was what? But tax cuts, all the tax cuts for the wealthy, resulted only in a 0.4% jump in job growth. Jeez.
Which is statistically not significant.
Not at all.
For those of you who want the cold, hard statistical explanation, read the full Tax Cuts for Whom? Heterogeneous Macroeconomic Effect of Income and Payroll Tax Changes. Boy, doesn't that sound interesting?
Well, anyway, we've got 10 seconds left.
Okay.
We want to thank everybody for joining us tonight
and
wish you the best.
And listen to the debate.
Yeah, on right now.
That's probably on right now. And
everybody's tuned out.
Yep.
So good night, everyone.
Good night, folks.
Join me here tomorrow night when we enter 4:30.